The Latin America Report is made possible by MBAF, CPAs and advisors.
From the WLRN Miami Herald Newsroom, I'm Tim Padgett. For half a century, only charter flights have been allowed to ferry people from the U.S. into Cuba. But today in Havana, the two Cold War foes will agree to let scheduled U.S. commercial flights land in the communist island, 20 a day into Havana and 10 daily into other Cuban cities.
This is more people-to-people contacts, and that's all to the good of mutual understanding between two countries that obviously have had strained relations for decades.
That's Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Transportation Thomas Engel. He's right. The agreement is another big step toward normalizing relations between the U.S. and Cuba. And there's more. An Alabama tractor company just won approval to build the first U.S. factory in Cuba since the 1950s. That's the sort of momentum officials from both countries hope to carry into Washington tomorrow for their second meeting on bilateral trade regulations. But even so, any American who's talked to the Cuban government lately knows how far apart the U.S. and Cuba still are when it comes to commerce.
It was almost like we were speaking a completely different language, even though their English was perfect.
I caught Melissa Duffy on her phone last week while she was in Havana. Duffy is an international trade lawyer at the Washington firm of Hughes, Hubbard & Reed. This was her first exploratory visit to Cuba, and she got an earful from Cuban officials about how different their expectations for normalization are compared to America's. The Obama administration is relaxing a boatload of restrictions on trade with Cuba, but it's doing so mainly to promote small private business owners there. The Cuban government wants Washington to focus instead on letting U.S. firms help rebuild Cuba's ragged infrastructure.
That is something that irritates them. Why is the U.S. government focused on hairstylists and barbershops?
U.S. companies can't do the big business in Cuba that Havana wants them to unless the U.S. trade embargo is lifted. Only Congress can do that. So it would help if the Cubans made a positive gesture, like reassuring U.S. companies they won't be forced into joint ventures with Cuban state-run firms in order to operate there. Duffy says that may strengthen the anti-embargo case.
U.S. companies can have some skin in the game and then go back and lobby Congress. And that seemed to me to be a point that the Cubans didn't quite get.
But some U.S. firms seem confident that the Cubans are starting to get it. One of them is Caterpillar, the world's largest maker of construction equipment based in Peoria, Illinois.
Cuba is a huge market for us in road construction as well as in the mining space.
Marco Salowitz is Caterpillar's Latin America director in Miami. Last week, Caterpillar named the Puerto Rican company Rimco to be its dealer in Cuba, even though it's not yet clear if Cuba will even allow such private sector distribution arrangements.
I was in Cuba in March last year. We had a great discussion about being able to bring in 100% private companies to operate in Cuba. I think gradually they are changing and they're opening for business, but there is much more to be done.
And executives like Salowitz want to see the U.S. and Cuba get it all done faster. Salowitz is originally from Brazil. Thanks in part to his efforts, Brazil's biggest construction firms use Caterpillar. But because of the embargo, they don't use it when they work on projects in Cuba, like the recent $1 billion Mariel port expansion.
When we thought that we were isolating Cuba, we're isolating ourselves.
Salowitz notes that in the 1950s, Caterpillar was the most popular heavy equipment in Cuba. Even the communist revolution preferred the brand. In 1958, Fidel Castro's guerrillas hijacked a Caterpillar bulldozer to help win a key battle.
They do have Caterpillar equipment that have been there for more than 50 years, and it still works today.
But this week, the U.S. and Cuban delegations may discuss baseball as well as bulldozers. This month, two of Cuba's best baseball players ever, brothers Julieski and Lourdes Gurriel, defected to play in the U.S. major leagues. It was a reminder that Washington and Havana need to hammer out a legal framework for letting Cuban players move between their island and the U.S. Fort Lauderdale attorney Paul Minoff of the Gray Robinson firm represents another Cuban baseball defector, Leonis Martin of the Seattle Mariners. Minoff says one immediate solution may be to exempt baseball from the embargo.
But at the same time, how do you do a carve-out for baseball players? Why is the baseball industry more important than any other industry that might be impacted by the embargo?
That's a good question. All we know right now is that if the Gurriel brothers ever return to Cuba, they can take a commercial flight. I'm Tim Padgett in Miami. You can read more of our Latin America coverage at WLRN.org.
The Latin America Report is made possible by MBAF, CPAs and advisors.